You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's series 4 episode 22 tonight and we've got an awful lot to get through once again. And I'm delighted to be joined by my two co-hosts tonight, Ethan Fitzpatrick and Gary Riley. We're going to be looking back at the final round of fixtures in the Premier Division. It was a dramatic night on Monday. And we're going to have some interviews to bring you as well. Liam Buckley, Sligo Rovers manager, joins us. Dara Doyle, the town boss, is going to speak to us. And we've got a couple of supporters to hear from tonight as well. Martin from the Men Who Say Football podcast. It's a new Dundalk fan cast that's out. It's very, very good. Give it a listen if you haven't already. We're going to speak to Martin about all the goings-on at Oriel in recent weeks and months. And we'll hear from Aidan Geraghty as well, a very passionate Shelburne fan, ahead of that promotion relegation playoff final on Sunday between the Reds and Longford Town. But Gary Fitzy, how are we doing tonight?
Not too bad. The boys are back in town.
That's it. Thanks for having me, Kieran.
No worries. Nervous week ahead, lads. I suppose it's good to do the show and just take the mind off it for a few hours.
Yeah. Look, we had a great night on Friday night. A great performance. So there's a bit of nerves, but probably not as many as there were in the last few weeks.
Yeah, and look, we'll have plenty of time to speak about that game. Yeah, let's start with the Premier Division review. Going to go to yourself for this one, Fitzy. Cork 1, Derry 1. And Gary, actually, I'll go to you for this one, actually, because when we were previewing this game last week, you laughed at me when I said Cork could get a point out of this one, but it's exactly what they got. And really, this performance and this result, it sums up Derry's season. It's just been a really flat display from them all year long, hasn't it?
I said last week that Derry would beat them if they all had COVID. How wrong I was. It really sums up their season. As you said, Derry have been absolute rubbish all year. I know we said in weeks past that Derry were probably more impacted by COVID than other teams, but at the same time they've had quite a poor season. And certainly, you know, I know they needed only a point to guarantee safety, but you know, to go one down against a useless Cork team, and then to have to rescue it is just really poor. So, Declan has a lot of work to do in the off season. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely. The goal from Cork came from Whit Marsh. Maybe a young one for the future. They're going to go down to the First Division now. It'll be interesting to see kind of what kind of players they have, what type of setup they go for next year. If they do turn to youth, though, it'll be the likes of Whitmarsh they'll be looking towards. Akintunde with the goal for Derry, a player Declan Devine has highlighted on this show in the past, but definitely a poor season from Derry and Cork into the First Division, as we know. That result meant Derry were safe, but Finn Harps had to get a win against Waterford and hope results elsewhere went their way, and they certainly did. Harps 1-0 winners over Waterford, Adam Foley with the goal. And Fitzy, I watched this one, I had all five games streaming at the same time, but I kept a very close eye on this one because, of course, it was Harps that were in the ninth position going into the night, so it was likely that they were going to be playing Longford Town, but they've got themselves out of trouble, and they fully deserved it as well. I thought they were really good value for the win against Waterford.
Oh, definitely. I don't want to keep repeating what you've said over the last couple of weeks, but like Finn Harps coming into the business end of the season, they're always a hard team to break down, especially going up to Ballybuffet, and as we said, from a Longford point of view, if we had got them in the playoffs, like, they'd be a dogged team. Like, but good result for them. But geez, they were very lucky there. Come the last couple of seconds, the ball was a couple of inches to the left there. Could have went in and got the equaliser. But very exciting finish to the season there with the playoff spots.
Yeah, and it would have been really harsh luck on McGinley in the Harps nets. He's been brilliant all season. He's played a big part in them surviving, and he got his wires crossed with one of his defenders. He drops the ball, and as you said, Waterford almost get, they should have scored. It was no more than 6 yards out, I think. But when I was watching Watch LOI, it looked like Dave Webster cleared it off the line. But according to the lads that were at the game, it actually hit the post. So it really was an incredible miss. Gary, I just wonder, had that goal gone in, Harps, they would have been absolutely on the floor and deflated. If they were going into that promotion relegation game, would you have worried about their ability to pick themselves up mentally?
Not at all. Sure, look, Harps are well used to relegation battles, so it just would have been another day for them or another game. To get out of the position they were in was a great escape, as they've been saying all week. So, look, fair play to them, but I don't think conceding a goal in the last couple of minutes, yeah, it would have been a pain, but I think they would have still fancied themselves to win the playoff.
Yeah, certainly with the form that they showed towards the end of the season, only losing one of their last seven games, and that defeat was against the champions Shamrock Rovers. So a brilliant end to the season from Finn Harps. And I think it's fair to say Ollie Horgan, look, Stephen Bradley's definitely going to be the manager of the year. He's won the title and they've done it unbeaten as well. You can raise your questions about whether it's actually an invincible season and all the rest, but they were the best side. They won the league for the first time since 2011, and they could do a double yet. So he's definitely going to be manager of the year. I think you look at the job Keith Long has done, he's probably second. But after that, I think, Gary, you have to look at Ollie Horgan and say, what a job he's done. He surely got to go on the shortlist for manager of the year at the very least.
I'm not sure I'd agree with that. Like, it's, you know, it's a case of, I've seen this episode before, like, with Harps, it's keeping them in the division for the last couple of years.
With the resources, though, is that not a miracle?
I don't know if it's a miracle. I think it's, that's their level. They're going to be in and around relegation. They get out of it, they get into a playoff and get out of it. I wouldn't be convinced that it's you know, it's manager of the year material either.
Fair enough. Fitz, are you a comment there?
Yeah, like, I just think, like, as Gary was saying there, like, Finn Harps would bite your arm off at the start of the season to just be in the playoffs even and not go down automatically. But, like, I don't know if you could say, oh, Ollie Horgan has had a massive season with them. Yeah, they've stayed up, but, like, they finished level on points there with Derry, and not two or three breaths ago, you're giving up without Derry having not a great season. Like,
yeah, but look at the resources Derry have compared to Finn Harps. Put it this way. Aside from Bradley and from Long, who would finish third in that manager of the year contendership?
Yeah, but I think that's more down to a lot of teams coming back after COVID and just not being consistent across the board, bar Shamrock Rovers obviously going unbeaten, and Bohemians, who kind of give them a little bit of a challenge. But other than that, I think the whole way down the table, no team has really struck form, bar Finn Harps, and in the, say, the extra time there, the last three or four games of the season when they really needed it.
I think you're selling Ollie short there, lads, I have to say.
No, I don't think so at all. I think Buckley would be higher up that.
He'd be fourth on my list.
Don't know about that now, Kieran.
Look, we're going to be hearing from Liam Buckley very shortly, so let's move on to the next game. But well done to Harps on securing their Premier Division status for next year. Shelburne 0, Shamrock Rovers 2. This is the game, obviously, and with that result in Ballybuffet, that confirms Shells will be the team that faces Longford Town on Sunday in that promotion relegation game. A brilliant goal from Jack Byrne once again, Gary, and Aaron Green puts the icing on the cake. The Invincibles, third time they've done it, and they're still the only club to complete an unbeaten league campaign.
Yeah, fair play to them. They're well deserving of it. I don't think it's fair to, you know, maybe dumping them a bit about, you know, shortened season and all of that. Everyone had their issues this year, and obviously COVID took hold of the whole thing. So they still did what they needed to do. Really successful season, and as you said earlier, they could still go on and do a double. So they had a brilliant year, and you have to hand it to them. They did a great job. So yeah, it was great watching, some great games. I think they'll be hard bet next year.
It probably says it all about the quality of Shamrock Rovers this season, Fitzy, that I would be very disappointed from their point of view if they didn't do the double now. They've got to be strong favourites to go and win that FAI Cup the way they're playing.
Yeah, I think it'll take a special performance from a team to beat them. I think the Finn Harps next in the Cup, and then the winners of that play, I think it's the winners of Sligo and Derry.
Yeah, they're probably in the tougher side of the draw, because on the other side, you've got Bowes playing Dundalk, and the winner of that takes on Athlone Town. No disrespect to Athlone. Dundalk and Bowes would be expected to win that semi-final quite comfortably. But of course, we've seen what Athlone did against Shelburne, but this is a bigger test altogether. But Rovers, definitely, it's not going to be handed to them. They're going to have to win those games, and they're going to have to perform well to lift the FAI Cup again this year.
Yeah, well, I suppose just on... I know I'm saying they have the tougher side to draw. I suppose, like, sure, Finn Harps can go hammer and tongs at it now, seen as they're safe. It'd be a different story if Harps had the playoff to worry about. I remember watching an interview there actually with Ollie there a few weeks back, and he with about three games to go, And he was kind of saying, well, do we gamble on the three games now or do we gear ourselves up for the playoff game? So I don't think they would have even had FAI Cup in their minds at all. But yeah, as you said, look, if you're a betting man, you're probably going to go with Rovers to do the double, as much as it pains me to say it. But look, they have been by far the best quality on the pitch all year. Like,
and a brilliant, brilliant goal from Jack Byrne. He's just been phenomenal this year. Is he the best player in the league?
Jeez, I don't know. Probably on.
Who's ahead of him?
I don't know. You probably would have to say he is the best player. Like, but there still is a lot of other talent there. But I suppose getting the Irish call ups and everything, like, you're going to have to go with him. But will he stay is the next big question.
Yeah, well, Stephen Bradley has said they're making a big effort to keep him. But you'd have to imagine, Gary, there will be interest from elsewhere. It's just a question of whether a move elsewhere is going to benefit him in terms of an Ireland call-up. I think if he knew he would be in that starting 11 for Ireland each and every week, while he's at Shamrock Rovers, he'd probably very happily stay here. But I think getting into that Ireland squad now is probably the ultimate goal in his mind.
Look, if he gets a few minutes in a competitive game, isn't that huge for Ireland? I'm not really sure, week in and week out, while still playing for Shamrock Rovers, that might be a bit of a stretch for him.
I'd agree with Gary there. Like, who's he going to... It's a debate for another day, because we could go on about it for ages, but like, who do you put him in ahead of in that Ireland squad, in that midfield?
I can't think of anyone. Not even Jeff.
Look, I'm a big Jack Byrne fan. I think he knows himself he's probably going to have to move to a higher level to achieve a starting 11 spot in that Irish team. But at the same time, we don't want to see him just jumping at a move to a League One team or a low down championship team that are battling for relegation, because that style won't suit his football. He needs to go to a team that's going to have plenty of the ball, and he's going to get plenty of opportunities in the final third to affect games.
No, that's the thing though. But if you look back, like, you know, Richie Towell was running the show, and you know, I know he's done a decent job in the meantime. But people were baying for him to be pegged into the middle of the Irish midfield as well. And you know, what league is he in? League Two now, is it?
Fleetwood in League One, I think.
League One. So yeah. Like, that's. You know, if Richie was an unbelievable player and he had an unbelievable season that year for Dundalk, so, you know, and then he's gone to League One and stuff like that.
I think I thought he was in League Two with that Salford side.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Yeah, he's gone to Salford. Yeah, taking my eye off the EFL ball this year. But
you know, I'm a big follower of the Queen's League.
The Queen's lower leagues, yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, he was brilliant. You could probably compare him to Jack Byrne this season, and that's where he's gone to. So, like, I think it might be a bit of a stretch to be looking for him to be going to a top tier, a championship club.
The only difference is, though, of course, Byrne has had experience abroad already. I suppose we've seen that with Keith Fahey, really, didn't we? He was with Villa, suffered with a bit of homesickness, came home, made a name for himself here, and went back and had a very good career with Birmingham City. So you'd be hoping if Jack Byrne does get a move back to England, he can benefit from the past experience he's had abroad.
I think we were saying before, Burke, it's kind of a reoccurring theme though the last couple of years about players who are standing out in the League of Ireland and they get this move abroad, and like, not too many of them have really gone on, bar maybe Seanan Maguire, that a lot of them have ended up coming back to the league or kind of gone out on loan from the team that they've signed, not really hit form. Some of them might have been a bit unlucky with injuries or whatever. But like, as you said, like, it kind of really has to pick the right move for himself, and it's not going to be an easy choice.
Yeah, and of course, with the COVID situation at the moment, maybe it just puts that little bit of doubt as well in players' minds whether it's the right time to be moving across. Look, I know it's England, it's only over the water, but it is something I suppose players do have to consider. We've spent enough on Rovers there. They've been brilliant this year. We'll speak about Shells later on. Let's move on to a couple of other Dublin clubs. St. Pat's 1, Bohemians 2. I think we've seen this one coming, Gary. We called it last week, didn't we? Pat's have just been not great at all this year.
No, they haven't. I think I might have been a bit harsh on them, but at the end of the day, I don't think that was a surprise, the way, you know, a loss at home to Bowes. both have been absolutely brilliant this year. And fair play to them.
You'd love to see them go and win a cup now, Boz, wouldn't you? This group of players, they really deserve it. You'd probably liken them a little bit to Pochettino's Tottenham, who were knocking on the door in many different competitions for years and didn't get that trophy. You'd love to see Boz go and win a trophy now.
I don't know about if I'd love to win love for anyone to see win a trophy, but if I was going to pick anyone, it probably would be Boz. They're a good club. They've been doing things well in the last few years, and of course Keith Long has been brilliant. I was talking to my Boz friend Colm there, and he was saying that Keith Long is the best manager in the league. So he's certainly up there. And you know, if we look at Bradley and him put them together, it's touch and go between the two of them. But I think if Boz can keep, you know, a lot of that team together, maybe a couple more, they'd probably give Rovers something else to think about next year. So, look, they had a great season, and certainly a nice run in the cup would top it off for them. But I'm not sure I'd like to see anyone else other than Town to win a trophy.
Yeah, I have to say, just on that FAI Cup run for Boz, they've got Dundalk next. I fully expect them to beat Dundalk. The way Dundalk's domestic form has been this season doesn't look overly strong. Then Boz will have a semi-final against that loan. So this could be the year we finally see Boz and Rovers meet in a cup final. And there's not going to be any fans at it, Fitzy.
Yeah, it's mental. Just, I think what the point you're making there about that team, that Boz team, like, and can they keep them together? Because, like, and you saying that Boz, you fancy them against Dundalk, like, and how strong Rovers have been this year, like, it'd be interesting to see. Because, like, if the bones of that Boz team does move on, or they don't strengthen next year, like, who are you going to have challenging for the title, really? Because, like, this year Boz kind of done half a challenge, really, you know. They kind of faded away. Like, it was a good league over the last couple of years, just say, when you did have your likes of your Dundalk and your Cork coming down to the final day of the season, Shamrock Rovers there in the mix as well. But like, it looks like it could be just a one horse race next year if Boz don't strengthen or keep.
I don't think there was ever a chance of Boz pipping Rovers this year at all. No matter, even if you look back to the second game of the season or first game of the season, whatever it was, in Dalymount, I think it was always just either Rovers just need to get through this and then they'll batter the rest of the league, which ended up happening.
Yeah, and you'd like to think Boz will benefit, though, from this year's experience. But the concern is, and Fitzy makes a very valid point there, if this Boz squad aren't able to build on what they have and Rovers do continue to progress like they have over the last two or three years, and you've got a bit of anarchy at Dundalk behind the scenes, it could easily become a one-horse race, and that's not good for the league. And already there's talk of some of these Boz players moving on, the likes of Danny Grant. He's been absolutely phenomenal this year. He's been linked with moves abroad. And I know they've confirmed that a young player, Ferguson, is going to move on to England next year, which is great to see. That's what Boz have been about, developing the youth, giving them their chance. But with that, obviously, comes the pitfall of your best talent getting picked off every couple of seasons. And you just worry now if they can develop on what they've done this year.
I know. I think that they can. You know, they should have all that money from Matt Doherty. Should have, you know, huge windfall there that they can try and coax some of the better players or the more strong players in the squad to hang around, and then it'll also give them the opportunity to add more to that squad as well. It'll be hard to see now what way it's gonna work. Because they had such a good season, who can they keep, and you know, where are they going to get some of these players that will try and improve the squad as well, and try and mount a challenge to Rovers next year.
Yeah, we're going to hear from our first guest of the night very shortly. Liam Buckley is going to speak to us after Sligo secured fourth in the league. Of course, they're still in the FAI Cup as well, but if they don't win the Cup, there's a very, very good chance that it's going to be Dundalk, Boz or Rovers that win that Cup. And if that happens, then of course Sligo will qualify for Europe next year. So Buckley's done a terrific job with Sligo. But let's speak about that game. They beat Dundalk 2-0 in Oriel. And Gary, it really should have been more. They dominated this game. It was an awful performance from Dundalk.
Oh, it was. They should have just started pegging shots in on Rodgers from anywhere at all. If it's 6 foot in the air, he'll make a bags of it. I don't understand. It was an absolutely mental goal for Rodgers to concede, but I just never was a fan of him.
Goal. a mental goal, but were you even shocked?
Oh, not a bit surprised. Not a bit surprised at all. You know, he's had a great career and stuff like that, but, you know, and I don't want to be picking on one player which out of a bad performance from Dundalk. But at the same time, you could argue he's keeping other players out of the squad now at this point. You know, how can you improve your goalkeeping?
I wouldn't agree with that. His backup, McCary, clearly not good enough to be the number one. And they've let a couple of young goalkeepers go to Drogheda, who have absolutely flourished in the first division this year. So again, that goes back to what's going on behind the scenes at Dundalk. There's nobody in charge there. The decisions and the recruitment is terrible. And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting off-season. I'd be worried from a Dundalk point of view.
Yeah, but they let those players go. Yeah, when were those players let go?
In the offseason, in pre-season.
Pre-season. So, it wasn't, you know, a burning building that it's been described as now at the moment. Back then, it wasn't probably great. But, like, you know, you're talking about McCary there and stuff like that. You know, there was... Rodgers should have been probably... or the club should have been looking to move Rodgers on a couple of years ago. He is a goalkeeper and he's a very successful goalkeeper.
It's an area probably that me and Gary have highlighted to you, Berko, a good bit, that we felt that if Dundalk were to hit the highs that they needed to strengthen in that position, just because, fair enough, I know, I don't want to be slating Gary Rodgers now, like he has the penalty saves and he's done stuff there in Europe, but there's a lot of times we come on here and it's, another goalkeeping error. And it's very easy, if a keeper makes one mistake in a match and that costs them the match, it's very easy to single out a keeper, where if a striker misses a shot and he has 10 shots, you know, that sort of way. But I just think it's an area that Dundalk haven't really looked at over the last couple of seasons. Whereas if you look at the likes of Shamrock Rovers or Bowes and the keepers that they have, we don't really tend to be coming on.
Let's go back to Rovers last year. They had a complete mess behind when it came to goalkeepers. You'll remember they went through a spell of having two or three different goalkeepers on the side. That wasn't rectified until they got Alan Manis back. And the issue with Dundalk is, I'm a big fan of Gary Rodgers. He had a brilliant season last year. He kept a record amount of clean sheets. He was phenomenal. He makes big saves in big games all the time. He easily picks up 10 to 12 points a season for Dundalk. Yes, he's had issues this season. But there was no issue in him staying there. But they should have been looking to the future, getting a young goalkeeper in there and training him up for when Gary eventually does have to be moved on. And they should have seen already McCary wasn't going to be good enough to replace Gary Rodgers when Gary eventually does move on elsewhere or decides to hang up the gloves. They should have been looking to have a young goalkeeper in there as the number three, giving him a couple of League Cup games or whatever it may be, and getting him ready for the future.
I wouldn't agree with the whole record number of clean sheets for Paul Hunt at that with Longford. I wouldn't pick him for me five-a-side team. You know, like the back four that he's had in front of him, that has a serious factor on it as well. Like Dundalk were dominating the league, like, you know.
I think if you were at the games every week, though, and you've seen the big saves he makes at big moments in certain moments of the season where the other team might not have the ball for 60 minutes, Dundalk have absolutely nothing to do, but Rodgers will pull out a big save when their back four does switch off. That's something that people don't speak about. When he makes a mistake, everybody's all over him like a rash.
It's easy to be overcritical of a keeper, as I said, because if they make one mistake and it changes the game. But I just feel it's a position that maybe they have to strengthen in next season.
Oh yeah, I don't think anyone's disagreeing in that regard. Let's move on from the goalkeeper though for a moment. Aside from that, the team selection was very, very strange from Filippo, and he's taken a lot of flack from Dundalk fans over this. You've got Sean Gannon, who's been the best right back in the country for any number of years. He's either playing on the right wing under this manager or he's not in the team at all. He's got left-footed players playing on the right side, left-footed players playing on the other side. There's players, he's putting square pegs in round holes when he really shouldn't be, because it's a massive squad they have and they've got a massive wage budget there. He should be getting more out of this group of players domestically. I know he's pointing towards fatigue because of all the games they're playing, but when you're at a big club like Dundalk who are challenging on all fronts, you've got to expect that, haven't you, Gary?
Yeah, I said it last week. That's what happens when you start winning. You're going to play a lot of games and that's life. I think. Some of the whinging that's been going on about the amount of games that they have to play as a professional team is just completely wrong. Yes, they have to play more games than others. That's life. That's what happens.
You should be delighted to be playing these extra games.
Absolutely. You should be on your hands and knees thanking God about it, because that means that you've had success. You know, like, we're not, Longford Town aren't looking at the playoffs as, oh, great, you know, we have to play more games now. No, we have a chance of getting into the Premier Division. So that's a positive. That means we had a moderately successful season and then some good games to get into this position. I don't think any Longford Town player, Longford Town fans, are going to be going, Jesus, all the games that we have to play.
Yeah.
I know it's not on the same level as Dundalk, but I think some of the whinging, you know, we said it before, you said it as well, has been completely unwarranted. And I know some chap interviewed Filippo there the other day. I thought that was an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, I have to agree. And I know I tweeted it as well, and a lot of people agreed with me. If I spoke to Darragh Doyle or any manager like that after a match, I'd fully expect a bar slip for me troubles. I thought it was disgraceful.
Oh, you would. Yeah, Darragh would have to get in the queue because I would have done one for you already.
no matter how much begging you do, then he wouldn't come on the podcast either.
But, like, come on. Like, at the end of the day, it has been an extraordinary season. We've said it 1,000 times before. Dundalk are playing in Europe. They're playing in the Cup. They're playing in the league. And Vinny was shipped on in the off-season. I don't think Filippo is the, or should be the place that the whinging is directed to.
I'd agree with Gary there. Like, the aim for Dundalk there was obviously to get into Europe, and Filippo's done that for them. They were never really going to win the league. I know you're saying about team selection and all this stuff, but, like, he's probably, these European games coming up, he's probably just using the league games to kind of test out a few lads and see what he has, because, as we said, he didn't really have a massive knowledge of the league, like, you know. So, like, they finished third in the league, they're in Europe. I'd agree there. Stop your whinging.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Gary, to cut across you, but we're going to hear from Martin in a moment from the Dundalk podcast. But I made an interesting point to you last week, and I think you kind of laughed at me at the time. I said, Filippo, he did get a reaction out of these players when he came in. When Vinny left, that Dundalk team were playing very, very flat. But when he came in, he seemed to get them a bit of a lift. So there is something about him as a coach, obviously. But the concern is he doesn't know the league well enough to go and recruit. And I suggested maybe they could look at getting a director of football in. And he's actually brought that out in the media today. And he said maybe that's something he would like to work under, a director of football or a chief executive of some sort who could do the recruitment and the off-field side of things, and him focus on managing the team. Do you think that's something that could be looked at, or do Dundalk just need to say, thanks for what you've done, but you're not the right man for next season. We're going to go and get an experienced head in here.
I've maintained that he should be given a chance next year, and that hasn't changed no matter what's going on in the league. At the end of the day, that's where the money is. You know, the talk going on about the money this and the money that, and Oriel, the way it's looking, they need the money, and Europe is going to give that to them. The more success that they have in Europe, that's what they need to concentrate on. Yeah, it wasn't a fantastic season. Ethan, you said it already. They weren't going to beat Rovers. They would have given them a better go of it, no doubt. But at the end of the day, Rovers were absolutely exceptional. So, look, I think the director of football part of things, has there been another League of Ireland club that has done that? Maybe a couple of, you know, positions that were director of football and manager combinations before, but it might be something to look at. I'm not sure if it's necessarily required for a League of Ireland club at this moment in time.
Well, they've got 18 players out of contract now, so somebody's going to have to deal with that quickly, because otherwise you're going to find players moving on elsewhere swiftly.
Yeah, of course, but that's also life. That's called running a football club. I haven't done it, but people out of contract, you either resign them if you want them. Now they have a load of money that they can do that. You know, this contract stuff is very interesting. A lot of players have been there for an extremely long time, and have been very successful. But a lot of them are coming to the end of their careers. So either they want to stay at Dundalk, want to keep them, or it's time for them to move on and recruit well in the off season. But like we said, there's loads of money there to do that. So if they want to let some of those 18 go, they're more than welcome to do that.
Yeah, look, we're very much outsiders looking in, even myself that has close connections with Dundalk. So what we'll do now, we're going to bring you our interview with Martin from the Men Who Say Football podcast. We're going to speak a little bit more about some of the scenes going on behind the scenes at Dundalk in recent times and what might be in the future for them. And then we're going to hear from Sligo boss Liam Buckley, because Sligo deserve credit for their season and the way they played at Oriel the other night. So we're going to hear from Bucko very shortly as well. Now, there really are some fantastic League of Ireland podcasts out there at the moment, and one that's caught my attention in recent weeks, and I suppose it links in nicely to some of the discussion we've been having about Dundalk on recent shows, is the podcast called The Men Who Save Football. And I'm delighted to say Martin joins me now on the line from that show to talk about Dundalk and some of the uncertainty around the Lily Whites at the moment. Martin, welcome to the show.
Hello, Kieran. Nice to be here.
As I said there, Martin, I was listening to your show yesterday. Really disappointing end of the season to lose to Sligo, and in truth beaten convincingly as well by the Bitter Red, and we'll be hearing from their boss Liam Buckley on the show tonight as well. But luckily results elsewhere did go Dundalk's way, so they finished third, they qualify for Europe, they're still in the cup, and obviously they've made it to the group stages of the Europa League. So from a management point of view, he's ticked a lot of boxes there, Filippo.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the surface level, there's a lot of success this year. And, you know, having watched Dundalk for a long time, we've been in many a worse position than this. So I think any criticism that, you know, we have of the team has to be kind of tempered a little bit by that. But at the same time, I think the relative to the expectations that maybe fans have, particularly for domestic performances across the whole season, you'd have to say that the team haven't performed as well as we would have expected over the course of the last, you know, 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, I know you've been listening to our show in recent weeks and some of the discussions we've been having. I know James and Gary were on last week and they were kind of asking the question, what more did the Dundalk fans want? As I said, outsiders are looking at, obviously you've had the great success of winning 5 of the last 6 league titles, so you can see where why that expectation is there. But for most other fans, to see supporters complaining about group stage football, about a third place finish in the league and still the chance to pick up some silverware, it's a little bit alien to other people. But again, going back to the expectations of Dundalk, you can see why there is a lot of frustration out there.
Yeah, so I mean, we took a look at the domestic performance stats since the resumption of football after the initial lockdown. And Dundalk came out of that, you know, third from bottom of the table. Only Shelburne and Cork had picked up 0 points. And I think, you know, with the level of investment that there's been in Dundalk, with, you know, the standing of the club going into the season, you know, as champions, and the playing staff that are available to the club, I think it's fair to say that that is well below expectations. Now, there's many kind of mitigating factors that you might put on that. You know, first of all, there's I think just the tiredness and fatigue that, you know, are on the team after, I think, something like nine games in 27 days, which is a pretty intense schedule. But I think, you know, again, looking at the actual resources that are available to the club in terms of the squad, it's a big squad. You'd think that they should be able to cope with the number of games that are involved, because that was sort of the ambition of the club in the first place going into the season. You would say that, you know, relative to those expectations, domestic performance hasn't been good. But of course, you know, there's a lot to be said about our European performance as well. Like, that is definitely the silver lining to all of this.
Yeah, I know from listening to you lads again yesterday, there was kind of a feeling that maybe the players have naturally lifted their performance levels because they're on the bigger stage, they're playing better opposition, they're more focused, and perhaps the players have had a lot to do with the success in Europe, and domestically maybe some of the manager's shortcomings have been found out. Now look, that's just one way to look at it, but if you want to give the manager credit, he did come in when the team was playing some very flat football, some very flat performances. Things just seemed to have gone stale for whatever reason under the previous management. Obviously they had lots of issues off the pitch too, as we know. But just from a supporter's point of view, I raised the point last week and the two lads laughed at me, but I see it was mentioned in the media today that Filippo might like to work under a director of football. If there was a name, someone to come in, somebody like a Pat Fenlon, for example, I know that's not realistic. He's working for Lingfield and probably wouldn't be on Dundalk's radar, but somebody of that stature that understands the league, understands the player market out there, came in and Filippo was to stay in his position as head coach, would you be overly happy with that? Or do you think just the club needs to go out and get a more experienced manager in League of Ireland football?
There's definitely logic to that approach. You can see that, you know, when you've got a coach who isn't especially familiar with the league, you know, probably 9 months ago he would have struggled to point out Dundalk on a map. So, you know, to come into the league and to be able to identify transfer targets and recruit people and stuff like that is probably an unrealistic proposition, like, based on himself and his assistant's experience. But you know, one of our contributors, Rory, kind of made the point of, you know, why are we considering paying two people to do the job that maybe one person could? You know, there's plenty of coaches that, you know, are pro license holders, you know, in and around the league, that you think might be, you know, targets for Dundalk in terms of recruiting a coach and a manager who also have the experience in terms of the league and, you know, people that they could recruit and have a good knowledge of, you know, what players might be coming back from England and things like that. You know, why are we looking for two people to do the job that maybe one person can? And I think that's the counter argument to this at the moment.
Yeah, that is a very, very fair point you make, Martin. Look, is the big issue here the issues behind the scenes and some of the figures, the decision makers of Dundalk, they wouldn't really fall into the category of football men, and they probably wouldn't, they definitely wouldn't fall into the category of League of Ireland men. If a traditional League of Ireland chairman, let's put it that way, was making the decision, they'd probably say, Filippo, he doesn't have enough experience in the league, recruitment's going to be an issue, and as you said, why should we pay two men to do one job? They'd probably look elsewhere, but this is a very, very different type of man making the decisions at Dundalk. Is that a big concern?
It is, and I think, you know, probably the most disappointing thing about the Peak Six takeover generally is that when they originally came in, you know, the previous owners, Paul and Andy, felt that they didn't really have the time commitment to kind of give to the club in terms of advancing it from where it was. And I think the proposition that was really offered to them by Peak Six was having somebody who could come in and really run the club in a, you know, super professional manner.
Yeah.
Get, you know, good football people to, you know, be chairman and chief executive of the club, who could really, you know, work with a coach to, you know, kind of move the club forward from where it was. And it was already at a very, you know, successful level. But I think over the past few years, it's become, you know, readily apparent that the wrong people, you know, were consistently brought in for those types of jobs. Like the first chairman had a big row with, you know, one of the sponsors and, you know, nearly lost our major sponsorship deal, and he left after a short period of time. Like the second chairman didn't stick around any longer, and I think there was a number of, you know, kind of, I won't repeat any rumours, but, you know, behind the scenes shenanigans that were going on that really seemed to be undermining, you know, the yeah, sense that the coach, Vinnie Berth at the time, was in charge. And I think that has continued on into this season too. And your real worry as a Dundalk fan is that, you know, that circus behind the scenes is starting to really overshadow the performance of the team on the pitch. And particularly, like I say, after lockdown this year, I think there's a lot of evidence to say that's happening.
Yeah, and you lads raised the point as well. A lot of long-time volunteers from the club have walked away in recent months because some of the shenanigans, we'll put it that way, behind the scenes. Do you feel there's a danger of a disconnect emerging between the supporter base and the football club itself?
I think there probably is. It's a little difficult to tell because, you know, we've had such an unusual year, and, you know, supporters and their clubs are kind of separated by, you know, many different types of barriers at the moment.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to get a sense of, you know, exactly how the fans feel, but I can't help thinking in a way it's kind of lucky for some of the club hierarchy that, you know, there haven't been fans in the ground this year, because I think there could have been a lot of, you know, vocal supporter unrest if they've been allowed to express their feelings on the terraces. But, you know, I think for a successful club and one that you want to see challenging for the league title, you know, you need to have certain setup in the club so that, you know, you've got a coach who knows what he wants to do in terms of the type of game that he wants to play and the players that he wants to do it. And you want to have, you know, backroom staff and, you know, the chairman and the people who are holding the purse strings to basically be able to, you know, identify targets, recruit them to sign up, you know, the current players in the squad, and for everybody to be, you know, aiming in the same direction and kind of working according to a bit of a plan. And I think, loath as I am to, you know, praise Shamrock Rovers, what they've done over the past few seasons, you know, if you look back 3 or 4 years, they had some obvious deficiencies in the squad. And one by one, they addressed those, you know, at goalkeeper and right back. And, you know, maybe they still haven't got an out-and-out striker, you know, at the moment. But slowly but surely, they've kind of knitted together a league-winning side while identifying those positions and recruiting very well over the course of a couple of years. And it's very hard to look at the current Dundalk situation and have a confidence that, you know, the club, between the coaching staff and the club management, are really all going to be on the same page and pointing in the same direction and have a good solid plan to, you know, address some of the weaknesses at the moment.
Is there a fear now with so many players out of contract that some of the players that have played such a key role in Dundalk's success in recent years, I'm thinking of the likes of Sean Gannon, who's been in and out of that squad and in and out of positions, which is really hard to believe, because I don't think anyone listening to the show tonight will argue that he has been and still is probably the standout right back in the League of Ireland. To see him playing on the right side of midfield and not even playing some games, it really is crazy. And maybe Shamrock Rovers, you look at their side, I know they've been playing Ronan Finn as a right wing back. It's difficult to argue that if they signed someone like a Sean Gannon, he wouldn't improve their side. Is there a big fear now that this Dundalk squad could be picked apart and players might not want to stay there given everything that's gone on off the pitch this season?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult one to call. I think Dundalk were one of the few clubs that, you know, paid their players the full wage the entire way through the pandemic. And I think that's very creditable. And I think, you know, there's a few players who might be, you know, paying mortgages and stuff like that who were very grateful to be in that situation. And looking at the uncertainty that's around, you know, next season, it seems very unlikely that we're probably going to have, you know, supporters back in the grounds by, you know, February or March. So I think on the, you know, basic kind of financial sense kind of thing, I think there's a lot of players that if you put a good deal in front of them, they might be inclined to stay on at least for another season. But, you know, on the flip side of that, I think, you know, the uncertainty that's going on in the club, and it's hard to say what's going on, you know, within the dressing room and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm sure the players are not, you know, oblivious to, you know, what's going on behind the scenes and some of the interference that there has been from the boardroom in the running of the team. You know, how will they weigh that against, you know, the financial safety of staying with Dundalk? Difficult to say.
Yeah, look, final question, Martin, been great speaking to you. Obviously, Dundalk could turn this around. It could be just a bad season. They get their act together off the pitch and they bring in some good players for next season. And before you know it, they're doing a double or a treble once again. But on the flip side, we've seen how easy it is for things to slip away quite dramatically. Cork, a prime example of that, playing Champions League football, winning league titles, winning doubles, and a Turner's Cross absolutely packed out each and every week. And all of a sudden, they're in the first division. It wouldn't take an awful lot to go wrong for Dundalk to end up in a similar situation next season. They really need to get their act together in the next couple of weeks, don't they?
Yeah, I don't think there's a single club in the league who probably aren't at risk of, you know, a catastrophic failure after, you know, if maybe two or three seasons go in the wrong direction in terms of like mismanagement of the resources of the clubs. At the same time, things could be turned around, you know, you always hope. And I think looking at the current Dundalk size, if they do manage to hold on to most of their best players, I think the kind of changes that are needed are probably small surgery rather than a radical overhaul. And like one of the things that I've said to other people recently is that if you look at League of Ireland sides over the past few years who suffered, you know, really high levels of turnover in the squad from year to year, they tend to really struggle to start the following season. You know, trying to integrate, you know, 11 or 12 new players into a squad is always really tough. It takes a long time for, you know, players to learn each other's game and that kind of thing. And if you get off to a slow start, like certainly in terms of a challenge for the league title, you can be a long way off the pace fairly quickly. So I'm kind of hopeful that we'll do a reasonable job of retaining, you know, most of the key playing staff. And like I say, I think, you know, around about the middle of midfield, bringing a couple of players that are a bit more dynamic, a bit better on the ball, you know, might be just small changes that are needed in order to see this team kind of get back to roughly where they were.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting off-season at Oriel, to say the very least. And of course, they've still got games to play this season, two more games in the Europa League group stages and that FAI Cup quarter-final against Bose. So we wish Dundalk the best of luck in those. Martin, thanks very much for speaking to us today. And for all of our listeners out there, you can find the Men Who Save Football podcast, I assume, on all providers. Martin, you're on Spotify, certainly, and I assume you're everywhere else as well.
Just about everywhere, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Martin, thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, a fantastic end to the season for Sligo Rovers. They beat Dundalk the other night to secure fourth spot, and they're still in the FAI Cup as well, so it could be a very, very good end to the season yet for the Bitter Red. And I'm delighted to say their manager, Liam Buckley, joins us on the line now. Liam, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks, Ciarán. Thank you.
As I said there, Liam, an absolutely fantastic result, and I'd say you were quite pleased with the performance the other night against Dundalk as well.
Yeah, it was a great performance the lads put in. In fairness, it was a must-win game from our point of view because we're 2 points behind Waterford, obviously. So we required a win. And in fairness, they applied themselves well. We threw a few chances, and in fairness, McGinty, our goalkeeper, played particularly well. Pulled a couple of really game-saving saves But look, overall, we've worked extremely hard for a win, and I think probably at the end of it, we deserve it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is about Oriel Park and Ed McGinty, but any time he plays there, he seems to have a stormer. It was a couple of seasons ago, Dundalk won 5-0 on the final day of the season when they were lifting the title. McGinty played that day, but he was actually one of the best players on the pitch. He was absolutely phenomenal that night. He pulled off some great saves, and he was very good again the other night. He's a very talented young man, isn't he?
Yes, he's a very talented goalkeeper, yeah. He's included in the Irish under-21 setup now at the moment, so hopefully he gets a game over the next sort of week. They're away for 10 days now. But, yeah, he's top goalkeeper. We have another goalkeeper, young keeper with us, Luke McNicholas as well. The two of them are great, in fairness, you know, so we're blessed at the end.
And one player that really stood out towards the end of the season was Ronan Coughlin. Obviously, Ronan's had his injury issues in recent years, but he's been brilliant for you towards the end of the year. He got the final goal as well. It was a lovely goal as well, a great way to end his league campaign. So we're starting to see the best of him now.
Yeah, it was a great strike for the finish. You know, it took the pressure off us. The event of the other game being a draw, that was the second goal we needed. But yeah, he did well. The whole team did well the other night, you know, the kind of way. And most centre-forwards like Ronan or whoever else, they need service, you know. And if the team plays better, obviously our centre-forwards and our wide players will play better. So to that end, we've been up and down a little bit this year, but in fairness, I do see improvement going to next season, please God.
Yeah, early on in the season, it was a difficult start for Sligo, and many pundits were talking about maybe a relegation dogfight, but post-lockdown, your team has been a lot more consistent and pulled out some great results, including two wins over Dundalk. What was there a certain change in the off-season? Was there something different during the lockdown that's contributed to that turnaround in form?
Well, at the start of the season, we were terribly unlucky. We picked up a few injuries. John Dunleavy hasn't played all season. He would have been in the starting lineup. Danny Kane was struggling with an ankle problem. He didn't play any games. John Madden, unfortunately, broke his leg. He's only kicked in 3 games ago. Regan Donlan dislocated his shoulder, didn't play. Lewis Banks, our player of the year last year, didn't play. That's 5 players that arguably could be in our team. They were all missing, and they're all defenders. And we did struggle a bit at the start of the season. With that, we were juggling people around, midfielders playing right back and centre back, etc., etc. But we got most of these back after the restart, and we then brought in one or two as well. But Alex Cooper Jr. came in, Ryan DeVries came in from New Zealand, and Siggy Tassel-Berks we brought in from Lithuania, just to bolster where we were at, because we weren't sure where all these guys were they going to make it back? But they got back, so we're that bit stronger then the second half of the season, and we did kick on, you know.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about Ryan DeVries, because he's a player that's really caught the eye. He's very technically gifted, and he's been a good addition to the side. Overall, what have you made of his arrival into the league and how he's performed?
Yeah, he came in the break, but just before us. He's made a big impact on where we're at. Great lad. Really good in the dressing room, but particularly he plays particularly well in a few different areas. We've played him wide left, we've played him off the front man, we've played him up front. He can also do on the right as well. So that versatility was required, especially with all those injuries that we had. But yeah, top player, I've done really well.
Yeah, and of course he has an international cap as well, so you probably knew he had that little bit of quality about him. But one player we all knew quite well was Junior coming in. Maybe he hasn't scored as many as some people would have expected, particularly when you compare it to the form he had at Derry last season. But is it fair to say that his arrival gave the whole camp a bit of a lift when he arrived?
I did, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because it was another forward player, because we were down Ronan Murray. Ronan struggled all season with injury, so he didn't make any sort of impact from that end. So we were down numbers. But getting him in, obviously the top scorer last season, he might not have scored as many obviously this season with us. That said, he's still made an impact, because there's a defensive side to playing wide left or wide right, which you have to put in. And in fairness, up until Dundalk tonight, I thought he was great. And he covered Sean Gannon, Sean Hoare up and down the right there, you know, the kind of way. So, you know, both sides of the game you have to look at. But he kicked in really well from that end. And yeah, I've no doubt there's more in him. I would presume then in the next season he'd be better again, you know.
Yeah, and obviously as we mentioned at the start, you've still got some games to come this season. Hopefully you've got many games to come in the FAI Cup and might go all the way. And obviously you'll be keeping an eye if you do, unfortunately, go out on other results in terms of what it means for Europe. But does that make it slightly difficult to start planning for next year?
To some degree it does, yeah. I mean, obviously from a club perspective, we're community funded. The support is on our football club, so it's quite tricky and difficult to you know, organise your budget for next season. That said, this year they've done fantastically well to get us to where we're at. Like they did put their hands in their pockets to keep the club afloat, keep us going right through that pandemic, and even to bring in one or two of the players that we brought in. And thankfully now, and hopefully if fourth spot was to be a spot, it'd be great for all them, I have to say, bearing in mind the contribution they've made to where we're at. Yeah, you know, I'd be very grateful. The impact they've helped us out with helping sign these players, you know, the kind of way. So it was great from that end, you know.
Yeah, and if Sligo do get into Europe, fingers crossed that the fans will get to go on a trip, because it was really, it was awful to see the likes of Bose this season, who qualified for Europe for the first time in many, many years, and their fans were denied the trip. So let's hope, fingers crossed, Sligo fans, if they do qualify for Europe, they get their day out. But look, final question before we let you go, Liam. You're a vastly experienced manager in the League of Ireland. Has this been the strangest year you've ever had involved in football?
It has been, absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, obviously you had a pre-season, and then you had four or five games. Then you have another off-season, you know, for a couple of months, and then you come back again. And then with the rules being brought in that you cut down to 14 games, we had 14 games to save our season.
Yeah.
You know, from it, we're bottom of the table for 4 months. I still was thinking on the lines of we were still only 9 or 12 points off Europe, even though we were bottom of the table, and that's what we had to focus on, you know. And we've pulled a few points out of it and whatever, we've done enough to get up to 4, so hopefully that might be enough. But it has been an incredibly strange season for everybody. I can't believe there's a relegation in it. Unfortunately, Cork were bottom of the table, and Shelton in the playoff, you know, bearing in mind the amount of games that were given, like over a 26 game campaign, you have a much better chance of making Europe, and you have a much better chance of getting out the bottom end of things, you know, because you've got time and windows of opportunity to try and do it. But it was just the rules and regulations are all brought in, you know, and from that end, I've no doubt that a couple of teams are in trouble at the bottom end would be disappointed. It's been an extremely strange season, you're right.
Well, as a Longford Town fan, I hope we're going to see one more team relegated this season. But Liam, that's where we'll let you go. Thanks very much for speaking to us today, and best wishes for your run in the FAI Cup as well.
Yeah, thank you, Ciarán. Cheers. Appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah, and that's our Premier Division coverage, really done and dusted for this year. I hope you've all enjoyed our analysis of the games and some of the interviews we've brought you. But don't worry, we'll be hearing from plenty more of the Premier Division players and managers over the coming weeks. We'll do little reviews about how each team sees and went, and we'll speak to some of the players involved. Let's move on to speak about the playoffs, lads. And Gary, I'll go to you, because you were at this game with myself. We were very, very lucky to be there. But an absolutely brilliant performance from Longford Town. We've done a lot of crying about the town on this show this year, but without a doubt, this was their best display, a 2-1 win, and it probably should have been a lot more comfortable than it looks on paper.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was a complete performance from Longford. We weren't expecting it, and even when we were 1-0 up at halftime, we were kind of saying, you know, could this be a game of two halves for us? You know, great 45-minute performance in either half, and then the other half is absolute dirt. So, look, Longford were exceptional throughout the game. I thought they were complete value for the win, and looking back, I was really disappointed with Galway. They didn't really offer, you know, whole pile.
I was just going to say about Galway, they were really poor, weren't they? Because you looked at me a few minutes into the game and said, geez, is it just me or are Galway set up very negatively? And I said to you, yeah, I can't believe how far they're standing off Longford. Longford were passing the ball out from the back. There was no pressure on them at all. They were feeding it into A. Dervin in the middle, and he was allowed to run the show. I think they actually showed him a little bit of disrespect. I don't think they realised how good he is on the ball. I've said this before. A lot of people think of A. Dervin as this bit of a hatchet man in the middle who loves to get stuck into tackles. He's phenomenal on the ball, and he showed that with his goal as well. He was absolutely unbelievable on the night. All the journalists that were there, even the Galway ones, they were raving about him after the game, and rightfully so. And there was a couple of people there connected to other clubs in the stand, and I think he's definitely a name that went into a lot of copybooks on the night.
Oh, definitely. He has been, you know, performing well, certainly in the last few weeks, but he's had a good season, no doubt about it. I just thought, like they were letting him receive the ball with back to play and turn around without any hassle at all. No one laying a hand on him, which was quite disappointing from a Caulfield team, no matter who they are. So A was able to not fully run the show, but he did a good bit of running the show, and was able to make those passes into the right positions to be able to attack Galway. But yeah, like, I was expecting a bit more of a fight from Galway. They just weren't offering anything. It was a couple of steps into the, you know, long, maybe the Longford half or out of their own defence and then pumping it again. It was poor, poor football. And they were lucky with their goal. You know, I'm not sure if it was a mistake from Lee. It was just an unfortunate punch that hit off the head of Browder or Fatterdy.
Very Fatterdy, yeah. So he got a goal on his final appearance as a League of Ireland player because he retired during the week. And best luck to Billy.
Who could blame him after that disappointment? but like, look, they were... I was just disappointed with Galway. Like, obviously, it's good. I should be concentrating on Longford Town. And they were full value for the win. Brilliant goal from A. Completely deserved. A couple of players that I want to point out. It was another great performance from Dylan Grimes.
Yeah,
super. Really, 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 really worked hard. I'd never seen the like of it. Rob Mandy again and the pair of Joes in the back. Just an all-round performance was exceptional.
I think you're forgetting Aaron McNally as well. He was phenomenal.
I was about to come on to him. He was given the free rein on the left-hand side. He absolutely ballooned the ball. Probably still in orbit at the minute. But he was exceptional on the left-hand side and Galway didn't really have much to do about him. He was able to run in on either foot and attack Galway's defence. So great performances. Dara, hope, I mean, for a change, he had a couple of performances there. So he has a bit of a decision to make for Sunday.
And Fitzy, I know you watched the stream of this one. And look, a good end to the season for Galway, despite this disappointment. To get into the playoffs was a miracle where they were when John Caulfield took over. And I think they'll definitely be among the favourites for promotion next year. And we've spoken about it before, given the contacts and the links John Caulfield has, you'd imagine he'd be able to bring in some big name players. Did he probably learn a lot about certain players in that team that he's probably going to look at them and go, they're not good enough, let it be technically or maybe mentally, to go on and do a job for me in the big games. I seem to recall a certain Galway striker having an awful lot to say on social media after after Galway bet Longford 6-2 in a game he did not play. He was not involved, and he had about 3 touches in the entire game the other night before he was took off.
Oh, was he playing, Kieran? I didn't notice. I don't know, I don't want to rub salt in the wounds here now, but yeah, look, I think what surprised me most after the match was kind of Caulfield was kind of going along with that they were just kind of happy to have got as far as the playoffs, and I think he was just kind of putting on a bit of a face because I'm sure they would have loved to get one over on us there, but it wasn't the Galway side that we'd seen earlier in the season. Like, we were 2-0 up against that Galway side and they put 6 past us and they looked ferocious. Like, you know, they were winning the second ball. They were causing us serious trouble down the wings. You know, Longford just looked completely at 6s and 7s. But like, as you said there, I think Longford played well, yeah, but Galway didn't really stop us. You know, like, there was too much space given to Longford. But I just think that Dara really got the tactics spot on. And it's going to be a huge boost for Longford now going into this game against Shells. After getting Dean Byrne getting the goal against UCD, confidence was high. But to go down and then have that performance against Galway, and as Gary said, like it was just an unfortunate punch from Stacey then for Galway to get the equaliser, but they never really looked like scoring at all.
Yeah, I just thought some of their attacking players were so poor on the night. Corran, as I said, he barely touched the ball. And Mikey Place out on the wing had an absolute stinker. I was surprised that and he's a player I highlighted at the start of the year as maybe been, you know, the top scorer in this division. I was surprised probably to see him playing out wide. I thought he might start through the middle. But Gotti was poor. So I just think Caulfield will probably look at some of the options he has in those areas and look to strengthen for next
year. Sorry for cutting across you. I think the way Longford set up, though, they were allowing Galway to have a lot of time and space, the fullbacks to have a lot of time and space on the ball. And the fullbacks, they weren't really going forward. As Gary alluded to there, like McNally for Longford, Grimes, like they were causing them serious trouble. So they were probably a bit hesitant to go down the channels. And it could be harsh on Kieran there. Look, he might have got too many touches, but like Galway didn't really have service in the final third. You know, they were pumping balls long, or A. Dervin Zambro were kind of mopping up the midfield. Like,
so yeah, he didn't exactly offer himself up for possession too much. So you have to work hard to receive the ball, and he was like a mannequin up front at times.
It's a good.
Are you gonna drive to Galway and take the dagger out of his back? Christ, man.
No, I think it's a good. You know, I know they're at different areas in their career or time periods in their career, Rob Manley.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the difference between the two, between Enda and Manley, like there's no comparison. Rob Manley could show up, you know, you go out to the car after the game and he's there washing it for you. That fella just doesn't stop working. I've never seen the beatings of it in my life. Full value. He got the Longford Town Player of the Month there for October. He works non-stop. Yeah. He'd be out at the right wing collecting the ball into the corner flag, rooting at a fella. No matter what it is, he's in it. Great performance. Didn't get on the score sheet in the last couple of games, but was key to our success.
I never say die attitude, and I think that really showed from all the Town players in the UCD match.
Yeah, and look, you've said it perfectly, Fitzy. Dara Doyle got the tactics spot on. So let's hear from the Longford Town boss now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the Longford Town manager, Dara Doyle, ahead of the promotion relegation playoff final at Richmond Park on Sunday. Longford Town go into it looking for promotion. They'll take on Shelburne, who are fighting for their Premier Division lives. Dara, welcome to the show.
Yeah, listen, it's great to talk.
And of course, Shelburne, of course, a club you've had an association with in the past. And it's probably fair to say most people weren't expecting it to be Shells going into it last night. It was Finn Harps in that pole position, or in that negative position, so to speak, in that ninth place. But they managed to pull themselves out of trouble. Were you expecting that?
I think if anyone had asked you maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, they definitely wouldn't have thought that Shelburne would have been in that position. And I think it's because of the run and the finish to the season that Finn Harps had, with only one defeat in the last seven games, that probably dragged a couple of more teams into it that possibly weren't expecting to be in that come the final game of the season. So once it got to that stage at the weekend, we were aware that obviously it was going to be one of three. And we did feel that obviously with the way the Derry situation was, that it would be tough maybe for them to get dragged in. But we didn't know what way it was going to go. And the way it worked at the weekend, you obviously seeing Waterford with a goal line clearance away from finishing fourth and possibly Europe, which would have put Finn Harps back into it. So that's all way they got. The games were to and fro on the other night. So you had to really say who you were going to get, because it's been such a competitive bottom end to the season there at, in the Premier with obviously Finn Harps won.
Has that made it slightly harder to prepare? But at the same time, obviously you've had your own game, so you've had to concentrate on just getting to this final, and you do have a full week to prepare now. So maybe not the biggest inconvenience in the world that you had to wait until last night to find out your opponent.
No, it wasn't, and that's the way we really have taken it as we've got into the playoffs. I mean, UCD was huge, and it was a game that had to be won. And the same like last week against Galway, it was another game that we prepared really well for and put in a performance to get us to this stage. And that's what it's done. It's got us to this stage where it really is a final and a really game that means so much. So this is the game that everyone wants to be involved in, and we've got ourselves here through two good performances. And listen, we have a week now to prepare to play against Shelburne, and that started this evening with a training session, and we'll have a couple more in the week as it goes on. And we need to make sure we get ourselves ready to go and perform now come Sunday.
Yeah, and of course, in other years, and in a lot of recent years, it's been a case where the team from the Premier Division going into this game, they perhaps knew their fate a long way out, and they've been able to mentally prepare for that playoff. But as you said, Shells, they'll be very, very surprised to have found themselves in this position. So it actually could be an advantage for Longford, the way things have worked out.
Yeah, and listen, but the one thing, the way it has worked out, like Shelburne have been competitive all season. They have. You look how close it is at the bottom of the end of the table there. I think it was 19, 20, 21 points, possibly 22. So it was really close in a competitive league to see who would finish up in that ninth place that would put them into a playoff game. So they have been competitive all year. We'll be expecting a tough game. I know, obviously, they had Shamrock Rovers on Monday night, so we have a couple of days on them from our last game. But I'm not really looking at any big advantage from them playing on Monday to us playing, obviously, a couple of days before that. It's just going to be a case now. It's a one-off game. In previous years, it's been a home and away leg. So I think people have found and people have seen from watching these games in one-off games that anything can happen in them, and they're probably better from the neutral, let's be honest. Going in, the one-off games are great, and I personally like that as well. I mean, you're watching Champion League, and if you look at it in any sport, you even look, I suppose, the All-Ireland at the weekend would have been a knockout. I think it adds to it with the one leg.
Yeah, and it's a good point you make there as well about Shells. They've obviously been playing at a higher level this year, and they did get some good results. They were one of only three teams to take points off Shamrock Rovers, so they clearly are a capable side. They've just lost their way towards the end of the season, and they find themselves in this position now. But as you said, it's a one-off game. Anything can happen. Longford probably still the underdogs, though, with Shells playing at that higher level all year.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think we do go into it as the underdog playing against a Shelbourne side that obviously would be a premier team, have a much bigger budget, and if they probably looked at it, they'd feel they'd have a stronger squad. We're happy with how we've gone into this game at the weekend with our couple of previous performances and how we've been together through the last couple of weeks will stand towards going into this game against Shelbourne. We'll do the work that we need to do that prepares us for the game at the weekend, and we'll be giving it our very best shot to put in the performance we need to get the result that puts Longford Town back in the Premier, and that's what we'll be looking to do. It really is.
Yeah, the win over UCD was just simply phenomenal. It was just an absolutely crazy game of football. Was the satisfaction you got from the Galway result a slightly different one? I think myself and a couple of supporters were discussing this the other night. There was a real buzz after the UCD game because it was just something that you don't see every day. It was just a crazy end to a game of football. But that Galway performance, it was a real 1 minute to 90 minute performance from Longford Town. They dominated from start to finish. They were unlucky to even concede that goal in the end. They were very, very comfortable winners, I thought. It was probably Longford's best display of the season, and you probably took good satisfaction from that, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no, hugely. You mentioned the UCD game, but obviously a 90th minute equaliser, an equaliser again in the second half of injury time, and then a winner in extra time. In injury time and extra time. So, yeah, listen, that's a fabulous way to win it, and your emotions do show in a game like that when you win things in last gap winners and it gets you through. So, yeah, it was a great win, but all it done really was got us into the next game. And, your emotions do run a bit higher when it's last minute winners and the game was how it was. You mentioned the COVID game last week, and I felt it was a very controlled game, both in and out of possession. And like you mentioned, I think we were totally deserved to get to this next stage. And it was a much more controlled performance, and not one you mentioned at the end. I didn't feel that we were under pressure. So really happy to win the game in the manner that we did to go into this weekend. And listen, it's all about this weekend because the rewards are huge now.
Yeah, we're going to let you go in a minute, Dara, because you've got a very busy week ahead of you. But just a couple of questions before we go. First of all, how are you body-wise going into the game at the weekend? Have you got a full selection to choose from?
Yeah, let's Sam, obviously, with his shoulder injury, and Thomas McLaughlin. We're good to go. We've one or two sore bodies, obviously, after the weekend. But everyone's good and ready to go and looking forward to the game. And they'll give us headaches for a team selection this week. So... we're good on that front.
And look, finally, we keep saying it's a real shame that the supporters can't be at these games, because as we just said, go back to that UCD game again, you can only imagine what the scenes would have been like when Dean Byrne scored that goal, the great win over Galway, and now this final game. I know that the players spoke on social media after the game that they took great inspiration from a video message put together by the Longford fans before the game, and I believe they have something in the pipework for this weekend. Have you got a message for the Town fans that can't be there on Sunday?
Yeah, listen, we did the amount of support that was behind us last week and the messages that went through, it was so much appreciated. And listen, the players and the group that we have here, we really are giving it everything we have for the supporters. We know how difficult it is for them not to be in at these games, and we would love more than anything for them to be with us and share these moments, because there was a couple of special moments over the last couple of weekends, but I know the real one is coming up this weekend, and it's so unfortunate, and both teams will feel lucky that we can't get crowds in. But listen, we'll be doing everything we can for them. We really appreciate them getting behind us and giving us all the support that they have, and they can rest assured that they're nothing give me more happiness and the lads in the group together to achieve something really special this weekend, and that's in our hands now, and that's something that we'll go and look to do and prepare to do that at the weekend. And if we can do that, it really will be a special season where a group of players will go down as a special group that have achieved something really, really brilliant. And that's in our hands now, and that's up to us to do, and we're now given that opportunity to do that because of our performances over the last couple of weeks. So I'd say roll on Sunday, and we'll give it everything we have.
Yeah, Longford Town promoted twice to the Premier Division, once under Stephen Kenny, once under Tony Cousins, but they've never done it this way through the playoffs. So look, Dara, thanks very, very much for speaking to us, and very best wishes for Sunday.
Listen, really appreciate that. Take care of yourselves, and all the best.
Between Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Yeah, so we've heard from the Longford boss. We're going to be hearing from a Shell supporter very shortly. Let's speak about the big game now, lads. It's Longford against Shelburne. I think as I mentioned in that interview with Dara there, we're probably a little bit surprised that it's Shells that Longford are playing. But I'm not sure, Fitzy, if you're ready. In Morris's interview this morning in one of the national tabloids, he was talking about the fact that players are not just playing for their Premier Division future now, they're playing for contracts next season. He appears to be a man that's slightly under pressure.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Which is, I don't think I'd be too surprised, Burke. I think when you had me on in the early days, I said Shells would be down in the mix here. I thought that they'd struggle with goals. And I think the pressure is definitely on Shells. Like, from a Longford point of view, look, I'm delighted that we got to the playoff finals. Obviously, I'd be disappointed if we lose, but obviously we'd be beaten by a Premier Division team. But, like, I think this Shells team are completely rattled. Like, and it's on Morris especially. Looking on form there the last while, they've lost their last three games. One of them was against Athlone. Like, Longford are going to have take serious confidence from that. I know you were saying maybe it wasn't a full strength Shells team, but there was still six or seven starters. It was an FAI Cup match, you know. And I know we're definitely going to mention about Deegan getting sent off as well and being suspended. Like, that's a huge boost for Longford fans.
Yeah, Gary, because I know we were texting each other during the final round of games, and when that happened, before that actually happened and it was starting to become clear it would be Shells, I text you and I said, my God, A. Dervin against Gary Deegan's going to be some battle in the middle of that field. And mm-hmm. All of a sudden Deegan's out of the game. Is that a huge game changer for Longford Town?
It's going to be a benefit to Longford Town, but I'm not sure it's going to be, you know,
the be all and end all.
Absolutely. Like, Deegan was ruined when he got the yellow card. That was his fifth, so he was out anyway. It didn't really matter that he got sent off in the end. But look, I think I read that article myself. That Ian Morris is under a heap of pressure there. Don't know what he's talking about there at Doyle, seeing what I'm not going to get anything out of watching Shells and Rovers.
I thought that was very strange. Strange comment.
Like, if he wants to show that he's not under pressure, he went the complete wrong way about it. Like, you know, he looks absolutely rattled. So look, he's under pressure. I certainly didn't think Shells would be in the position that they're in, but they just haven't been very good, certainly in the last few weeks. And here's where they are. That's what they get. Yeah. But look, at the end of the day, it's going to be a huge game for both teams, for obviously different reasons. But I think, you know, that article today just really put a smile on my face anyway.
Fitzy, from a Shelburne point of view, what's the dangers they'll pose to Longford Town? I would say they're quite good from set pieces, and obviously yeah. That's something Longford have struggled with this year. So that's probably that's the first one you'd flag up. Is there anything else we should be looking out for from Shelburne on Sunday?
Look, I think obviously, look, there is quality in the team there. I think set pieces are going to be a huge factor for if Longford can be tight on the back again against the set pieces. I think that we'll have a huge chance. Yeah. I know I've harped on about it a few times about Shells and where would the goals come from. I think I was looking at stuff before we went on the pod here, and the only team to score less goals in the Premier Division than them this season was Cork, and we know we've spoke about how dire they were. Like, so look, I think Longford have absolutely nothing to fear. Longford are the ones that have the bit of confidence going into the game. As we said, Shells are going into it. They wouldn't have probably have thought that they were, obviously they mightn't have thought they would have got a result off Rovers, but I don't think in the last couple of weeks Shells would have thought that they'd end up in this playoff position. You know, we've been speaking about how Finn Harps would be gearing themselves up to it every year. They're always scrapping down there. Like, this is a new thing for probably a lot of them Shelburne players, you know, and they're coming on the back of probably a poor season with a manager that's under serious pressure. So, like, look, it's not going to be an easy game. It's still going to be tight. flip of a coin, bounce of a ball. But like, from a Longford point of view, I'd be happy enough to, if it comes down against them, you know.
Yeah, just when you say the 13 goals, like even just as a very small piece, Shelburne haven't been scoring at all. But there was a ball in, I think it were 1-0 down. Shells were a ball in, and probably what, 4 yards away. Dobbs steps up and boots it into the middle of Drumcondra. It was shocking. And I know the fella probably hasn't a whole bag of confidence from the year, but they need, you know, this is when the chips were down. This is when they needed to pull something out of the game. And that was the return. So, like, Longford shouldn't have anything to fear in this game.
The only thing is, though, their defensive record hasn't been bad at all. So it's going to take a lot of concentration from Longford. When they have the ball, they have to be patient, wait for the gaps to appear, because if they do try and force things, then they could be picked off on the counter. Yes, they've struggled for goals this year, but this is a Shells team that's been playing at a higher level all year. They did pick up some decent results. They got that draw against Shamrock Rovers. And as I said, they're playing at a higher standard all year. So as ever, the Premier Division team is the favourite here. But that probably suits Longford, because as we've said, all the pressure's on Shells. It's all about their manager. It could be just a perfect storm brewing for Longford Town.
Who doesn't love a good underdog story? I think Longford are always underdogs in a lot of the stuff over the years. Like, I think that'll suit us. I think really just the performance against Galway, it give you so much confidence, because as we said, so often with Longford this season, they haven't given a 90-minute performance. But on the back of the two playoff games now, I don't think the players will have any doubts in their mind. They'll be well up for this, and they'll be quietly confident.
Yeah, and look, the game is Sunday, 2:30 kickoff at Richmond Park in Dublin, and it's live and free on Watch LOI. So hopefully there'll be a big audience tuning in for that. I always usually push you for predictions, lads, but given the gravity of this game, I'm going to take a week off. I'm going to leave you alone. What we will do now, though, is we'll go and hear from Shelburne fan Aidan Geraghty ahead of the game on Sunday. Now, the big game this week, of course, is the promotion relegation playoff final between Shelburne and Longford Town. It takes place on Sunday, 2:30 at Richmond Park, and it'll be streamed live and free on Watch LOI. And we're going to hear from the Shells camp now. I've got a Shelburne supporter, Aidan Geraghty, joining me on the show. Aidan, how are you keeping?
How's it going, Kieran?
I have to say, you know, we were just speaking off air there for a couple of moments, and I said to you, I thought the days of Longford and Shells battling for a while was finished. They had some great battles in the First Division in recent years, but with Shells going up last year, and there seems to be an awful lot of positives off the pitch in terms of the investment and what Shells have been doing to turn around after, I suppose, a dark decade or so, really, off the pitch. Things seem to be going in the right direction, but it's a little bit of a surprise to see Shells in this game, isn't it?
Yes and no. I think, well, first of all, I'd like to start off in a positive note. We're talking about the off-the-field situation that you mentioned. Thankfully, the club is in a much healthier place than it's been probably for over 20 years. The club is debt-free. It's benefited from a new investor, and there's a lot of young blood being kind of, the reins have kind of been handed over to some younger fans who are willing to volunteer. In terms of your question about it being a surprise, we think in pre-season we're probably there about to what a lot of people would have expected. Personally, I know I would have said if we avoided a playoff, that was a success for the season and anything else was a bonus. Obviously, that hasn't happened. But I think, objectively, Shells had the second smallest budget in the Premier Division this season and Cork had the smallest. So, from that point of view, we probably are about where we should be. I think Ian Morris deserves credit in the sense that he recruited some players that maybe could have signed at other clubs on higher wages, and he managed to sell the club to them and he managed to sell his plan, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. Unfortunately, a lot of those players haven't performed.
Has the success maybe of earlier on in the season, yeah, quite a good start to the season. I remember we had discussions halfway through the year about Shells maybe eyeing some of those European spots. Now, obviously mid-table would have always been the goal, I feel, for Shells, and as you said, to avoid that relegation playoff. But it's been a disastrous end to the season. That's been compounded by that defeat to Athlone in the cup as well. That's opened up a lot of question marks about the mood within the Shelburne camp. So has that good start to the season maybe put more pressure on Shelburne and in particular Ian Morris?
Yeah, I think it definitely has. The first four games of hard lockdown was two wins and two defeats, a huge Dublin derby win against St. Pat's. We think that may have artificially raised expectations, maybe not among Shells fans, because we think Shells fans are kind of eternal pessimists anyway, myself included. But we think from outside the club, expectations were definitely raised by the fact that we had such a good start. It's no coincidence that our biggest win against Pats came at home, and when there was nearly 4,000 people in Tolga, it was sold out. So the fans clearly played a big part, and we think not having them there has really hurt the players. But at the same time, I don't want to make excuses. The most frustrating thing from a fan's point of view is that they've shown how good they can be. We think the difference between our squad and Harp's squad, for example, is finishing at 8th is probably the height of Harp's ambitions, and rightly so. I mean, they're a provincial club. They haven't got a lot of money. So for them to stay in the Premier Division every year is a huge success. If you contrast that to Shells, we think, obviously I mentioned the budget already, but the fact that the club has such a big name might mean that media expectations are a bit higher. And even on paper, our squad really should be, at the very least, secure in mid-table. So I think the fact that we've fallen below that after the restart, like you said, has been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously going into Monday, there was the possibility for Longford Town they could have played Derry, Shelburne or Finn Harps. And when I was just looking at the different stats from this season, you'd always expect maybe Harps to have the better defensive record. They're very well organised, but don't score a lot of goals. And you'd look at Shells just because you think of Shells teams down the years, good free flow and attacking football. That's particularly how they played in the First Division last year as well. You'd think of plenty of goals, but maybe slightly leaky at the back. But it's actually been the opposite. Harps have scored more goals than Shells, and Shells have conceded less than Finn Harps. The lack of goals has been a real issue for Shells this year, hasn't it? I think Kilduff has only chipped in with 3 goals, I'm right in saying.
Yeah, 100%. We only scored 13 goals in the league this season. Kilduff, maybe rightly so, is getting a lot of flack for it, but we think if you're to look at how many chances he's been given, there haven't been that many. I know you have your Dundalk connections. I don't need to tell you how good Kieran Kilduff is. If he's getting good service, he's a 15 goal a season player, and these days in the League of Ireland, there are very few and far between. Now, that's not to say he hasn't underperformed. He has. The fact that he only scored 3 goals in the league is not nearly good enough. But the only game, off the top of my head, the only game I remember that he missed any chances that he really should have scored was Cork at home. Apart from that, any time he got a one-on-one chance, it was a goal. He just didn't get that many of them.
I know he's been in and out with the team here and there this season, but overall he's played the majority of games. Has the lack of competition against him been an issue? Because I know Dobbs did take his jersey for a couple of games, but again, I know we've said on the show, Dobbs, when he was with Longford, he was far from prolific. He stepped up to the Premier Division now, and that trend has continued. He just hasn't scored enough goals.
I wouldn't necessarily agree that the lack of competition has hurt Kieran. I mean, he's a constant professional. He'll give 100%, regardless of whether he has competition or not. But I know strikers are really kind of temperamental players. If their confidence is low, it's really low, and if their confidence is high, it's really high. So maybe that's been an issue for Kieran. In terms of Aaron Dobbs, he definitely has a strength. He can hold the ball up. He'll press for you. He'll run all day. He's good in the air. But like you said, he's not a goal scorer. I really struggled to see when he signed what was the reason for it, because he only scored 2 goals for Longford last season in the league in the First Division, and then stepping up to the Premier Division was always going to be a challenge for him. And like I said, he definitely has a strength, and I suppose it's a good thing that his strengths complement Kilduff's strengths. Like, Kilduff is supposed to be the goal scorer. He's the big man, and then Aaron can get around for you. He can press. He's kind of the more mobile striker. But yeah, the fact that neither of them have been prolific this season is a huge reason for why we're struggling. We just want to mention the defence. You were saying that we've had quite a tight defence. Shed's actually conceded less goals this season than Dundalk, which is probably sounds mad. But Shed's conceded 22, Dundalk conceded 23. I think a huge part of that is down to Luke Bourne, who, in my opinion, has been the best centre-half in the country this season. He's been playing alongside Oscar Brennan a lot, who's playing out of position at the centre-half. He's naturally a midfielder. Georgie Poynton is a midfielder playing at right-back, and Alex O'Hanlon is a midfielder playing at left-back. So the budgetary restrictions have kind of forced Ian to play a lot of players out of position, and the fact that Lachlan Fitzgerald got injured and Dan Bourne has had his injury concerns. So Luke Bourne is the only player in that back four who has a lot of experience playing in the position that he is, and he's really marshalled it, and he's been an absolute leader in that back four. And the fact that he's missed some games through suspension towards the end of the season, whether justified or not, has really hurt Shez. You can see the defence is really missing his presence.
And speaking of suspensions, obviously Gary Deegan's going to miss this game on Sunday. A former Longford Town man, strangely enough, he was suspended in 2007 when Longford reached the cup final as well. So it's strange how these things work out many, many years on. But how big of a loss is Deegan going to be in the centre of the park?
He's an experienced player. He's the club captain. He's been through these games before. He's played in cup finals. He's a huge presence in the team, which makes it all the more infuriating that he was so irresponsible on Monday night and got sent off. I know it was a Dublin derby and tempers were running high and everything, but like, he's 33 years old, he's the club captain, he's supposed to be the one setting an example. And I think he really let his teammates down and let the club down by getting sent off.
It was reported, though, in the press that the yellow card he picked up had already ruled him out.
Yeah, that's true as well. But I don't know. I wonder. Do players have that in their mind when they're playing? Even at that, like, there was 15 minutes left in the game when he got sent off, and Shells were putting a bit of pressure on Rovers, and then once the red card came, just took the wind out of our sails. In the first half of the season, Gary was excellent. Second half of the season, maybe he's played every minute this season up until the red card. So maybe he's run out of steam, or maybe it's not, there's not not left in the legs. You might need a few months off, I don't know, but there's really been a huge tail off in his performances, not just his but the whole team, towards the end of the season. So maybe someone else will be able to step in there on Sunday and make that position their own.
Yeah, look, going back to your manager Ian Morris, he's been in the press this morning and he's been speaking about how these Shelburne players, they're not just playing for their Premier Division futures, they're playing for their careers as players, and if they want contracts at Shelburne next season, they have to perform in this big game. Is it fair to say Ian Morris appears to be a man under immense pressure?
Yeah, I think so. I think he deserves a lot of credit for the way he came in and he got us over the line in terms of getting promotion and all that. And like I mentioned earlier, he's done a great job in recruiting players that maybe the budget dictates we might not be able to recruit. But at the same time, that you have to ask questions about some of the decisions he's made. Like I said earlier, I don't want to single out players, but there have been players underperforming who have kept places in the team. The fact that we've been playing the same system, the same formation in every game this season, apart from maybe one or two, points to maybe a little bit of inflexibility. But I don't think Ian is in any immediate danger of losing his job, nor should he be. But that doesn't mean he's immune from criticism.
Yeah, and look, finally, before we let you go, Aidan, what's your feelings on the game Sunday? Do you think Shelburne have enough quality to get past Longford?
Objectively, they should. It's a team full of Premier Division quality players. The likes of Kieran Kilduff, who's played in the Europa League. Luke Bourne, who I've already mentioned. Gary Deegan has won leagues and cups, and he's played in the SPL and he's played in the Championship. Objectively, Shell should have enough quality to get the job done, but it's 90 minutes. Longford are obviously coming into the game on a high, having come through the playoff series in the first division. Shell's arguably could be coming into it on a low from having such a poor run of form. You'd like to think that the players will have enough motivation to give everything they have for the club and for the fans who have been unbelievable through the lockdown. Like, just to mention what the club did during the lockdown, Shells were one of only three clubs in the country to continue paying players in full, along with Dundalk and Derry. I think that's something the players really need to recognise and give absolutely everything they have to save the club from going back down into the graveyard again. I'm not saying they haven't been doing that, but it's the fact that they have so much quality, and I don't think even you will disagree that on paper Shells should have a vastly superior team to Longford. So if the application is there and the preparation is there, they should get the job done. But it's 90 minutes. It's a cup final, really. And Longford are the team with all the momentum, so I'm sure they'll fancy themselves as well. But going to my head, I think I say 1-0 Shells.
Yeah, of course, the Premier Division team's always going to go into this game as favourites, so it'll be very, very, very interesting to see how things unfold. And obviously, it's just one leg this year, and it's a neutral venue as well, so it's a slightly different format to what we've had in years gone by. So we'll have to wait and see. Does that maybe benefit the First Division side? But Aidan, thanks very much for speaking to me today, and enjoy the game as best you can on Sunday. I know it's going to be a nervous affair for all supporters.
I'll do my best. I would wish you luck, but I wouldn't mean it, so.
That's all right, don't worry, I won't wish you luck either. Aidan, thanks very much. Right. Thanks very much. Good luck. Which brings us towards the end of the show and the charity bet. And I don't want to put the plight on us by looking for predictions for that game. So this week, our charity bet, as ever, sponsored by BarrowandRacing.com. You can have a fiver on any sporting event you like. I'm going to have a fiver on the Republic of Ireland to beat England tomorrow at Wembley, and it's 7-1. Gary and Fitz, give me a bet there. We'll start with yourself, Fitzy.
I don't know. I think anything I back over the last while has just gone to the dogs completely. So I'd nearly put my money on Shells and put the blight on them.
No, we'll move on. Gary, have you got for me? What have you got for me, Gary?
I'm just trying to think now. All I can think about is the Longford Town game. I think a draw in Ireland and England on Thursday.
Give me a fiver on Duffy to score a header, Burke.
Go on, we'll have that. So a fiver on Duffy to score a header, a fiver on a draw, and a fiver on an Ireland win. So we're going all behind the boys in green this week. Look, lads, that's the show as ever wrapped up. Thanks to our four guests tonight that spoke to us: Liam Buckley, Martin from the Dundalk Fans Podcast, Darragh Doyle, the Longford Boss, and Aidan Geraghty. And it's a huge game on Sunday. We'll be back again next week to discuss the fallout from the promotion relegation game, and hopefully we'll be speaking to you as a Premier Division club for next season. But that's where we'll sign off for tonight. Thanks for listening, and once again, a massive thanks to the two lads.